Thank you very much. Well, thank you, Mr. Mullen, for the kind introduction. I'm grateful to you and the other members of the Jefferson Literary and Debating Society for inviting me to speak. The list of speakers who come here on Friday evenings is truly remarkable. And for those of you who wish to see a more distinguished speaker, you have only to come back in the succeeding Fridays of the fall term. It looks very good. So tonight, I want to pose a question about our university. It's a simple question, but the answer may not be so simple. The question is this: how will we know that we are good? How will we know that the University of Virginia is good? How can we measure the worth of the university and its impact on its students? What are the indicia of quality for universities generally and for this university in particular? Here's another angle on the question. Is the average fourth-year student here different from the average first-year student? Or is a fourth-year who is taking a degree different from the person he or she was 4 years earlier? And if so, is he or she different because of the teaching and mentoring and leadership training and other experiences that occur during the course of your undergraduate years here? Or is he or she simply different because a 22-year-old has experienced 4 more years of personal growth and critical thinking development and other forms of maturation than an 18-year-old? A book entitled How College Affects Students examines this very question. Authors Ernest Pascarella and Patrick Terenzini describe the changes that occur in young people between their first year and their last year in college. Students learn to think in more abstract, critical, complex, and reflective ways. There is a general liberalization of values and attitudes, combined with an increase in cultural and artistic interests and activities. Progress is made toward the development of personal identities and more positive self-concepts. There is an expansion of interpersonal horizons, intellectual interests, individual autonomy, and general psychological maturity and well-being. The author's research showed that young people at the end of their college careers are more likely to vote and engage in other political activities, more likely to give to charitable causes, and more likely to use principled reasoning to judge moral issues. That's great. But how much of that wonderful personal development is attributable to college learning and the influence of the student experience, and how much is the result of normal human development and maturation? So take this thought experiment. What if two equal and equally talented high school graduates, let's say they had identical economic backgrounds and were identical in other things we could measure, like grade point averages and SAT scores, went in different directions after high school graduation? What if one came here to UVA and the other one went to Princeton or a community college, or stayed home and took college courses online, or joined the military instead of going to college at all? How would those two equally talented people turn out different from each other in 4 years? Well, we don't know because we're talking about hypothetical people, and this experiment could not be ethically run. But the question goes to the root of the original question. How do we know if the university is good? How do we measure the extent to which the UVA experience is responsible for the transformation of promising 18-year-olds into promise-fulfilling 22-year-olds? The quality question is one universities have grappled with for a long time, probably since the University of Bologna was founded in 1088. How do we know whether or not we're doing a good job? In recent years, this issue, reframed as accountability, has become a topic for public debate, as the U.S. Department of Education, accrediting agencies, and other interested parties have increased the pressure for colleges and universities to deliver measurable results. Those of us who work in higher education are not the only ones asking the quality question. In Michigan, where I worked and lived before I came here, American automakers are furiously touting the quality and reliability of their automobiles in an effort to compete with Toyota and other foreign car makers who have already established their quality bona fides. While GM and Ford spent the last couple of decades building enormous SUVs, tricked out with an endless supply of new features, Toyota beat them out for market share by making famously reliable, perhaps slightly dull, but high-quality cars. American car makers are playing catch-up now, although they did get some help recently when Toyota had to issue a massive recall to deal with an acceleration problem in their cars. But that's another story. The quality of a car is easier to measure than the quality of a college education. You can't get behind the wheel of a university and drive it 150,000 miles to see if it performs well or if it breaks down on the highway. The metrics of quality in a college or university are more nuanced. Another problem is that many determinations of quality are extremely subjective by nature. One example, in spite of all the obvious reasons why it should be impossible, judges try to score ice dancing. How in the world do you judge the quality of ice dancing? Unless an ice dancer falls flat on her face to make the judge's job easy, there is a complex code of points for the international judging system. Even so, there are subjective issues involved in scoring characteristics such as interpretation and choreography. What are the qualities that make one ice dancer's interpretation better than another's? What makes one dancer's particular tempo or step sequence better than another's? How do you judge that? It may be worth asking whether quality can be measured at all. Some of you may have read the best-selling 1974 philosophical novel by Robert Pirsig titled Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. The book describes a cross-country motorcycle trip by the author and his son. The narrative is interspersed with philosophical discussions, and many of these discussions center on the notion of quality. Eventually, Pirsig concludes that quality cannot be defined at all, because quality itself empirically precedes any intellectual description of it. Pirsig develops a theory he calls the metaphysics of quality, in which he argues that quality with a capital Q is the elemental force in the universe that stimulates everything from microscopic atoms to animals to develop higher and higher levels of quality in a never-ending cycle of quality creation. Now, even for the Jefferson Literary and Debating Society, that's pretty heavy stuff. But it helps to understand that we're grappling with a truly perplexing issue when we ask the quality question, and one to which answers refuse to come easily. Measuring the quality of a university, of this university, is a tricky business. It's riddled with loopholes and pitfalls. It's undermined by strains of subjectivity. It may appear so confounding that it doesn't seem worth trying to do so. But let's try to do it anyway. Most of us are familiar with the popular rankings that are closely watched by administrators, faculty, students, alumni, and anyone else interested in the high-stakes competition among colleges and universities. We've heard a lot of debate about the usefulness of these rankings, with supporters on one side and critics on the other. Those who support the rankings say they provide valuable information about the quality and reputation of America's colleges and universities. Critics say the rankings are an overhyped distraction for parents and prospective students who ought to be taking a closer, more personalized look at colleges and universities to determine the right individual fit for each student. Regardless of who's right in this debate, we know where UVA stands in the rankings. U.S. News & World Report just issued its most recent national rankings of colleges and universities. In the overall rankings for publics and privates, we tied for the number 25 spot with UCLA and Wake Forest University. Among publics, we tied for the number 2 spot with UCLA, behind Berkeley in the number 1 spot. That's not bad. But does it mean we're good? Regardless of precisely where we fall in the rankings, we want to be among the best universities in the world, public or private, American or foreign. We want to attract the very best faculty and students from all over the world, because the faculty and students are the ones who will determine how good we are in the end. Other rankings conducted by the National Science Foundation and the National Research Council tell us where we stand on research productivity relative to our peers. Published approximately every decade, the NRC rankings assess research doctorate programs in the United States. The upcoming NRC assessment, based on data from 2005, will be released next month. We will know more then about where we stood 5 years ago. The most recent annual NSF research expenditure rankings for fiscal year 08 place us 48th in total federal R&D expenditures. Our countable external federal R&D expenditures are $219 million and have increased over 78% since 2001. Our ranking as to scale among all research universities for total research expenditures is 70th. Our total research expenditures, that's not just federal, that's everything, are $257 million and have increased some 72% since 2001. This shows us two things. We're moving in the right direction, but we still have a way to go. One of the unique qualities of the undergraduate experience here, one of the measures of UVA's goodness, is that we blend the intimacy and collegiality of a liberal arts college with the extensive research resources of a major university. From your first day on grounds, you have the opportunity to participate in research and discovery with faculty members. This may not show up in the rankings, but it's an important part of your experience as students. Hidden below the surface of the overall rankings in U.S. News & World Report is some interesting information that tells an important story about UVA. Among the top 25 universities overall, we received the lowest ranking for financial resources at number 64. By contrast, Wake Forest, tied with us for overall quality, is ranked number 7 on resources, and UCLA is ranked number 23 for resources. This is the result of a steady decline in our state support over the last decade. Since 2001, state funding per in-state student at UVA fell from $12,011 to $8,601 in the 2009-2010 academic year. It is projected to decline further to $8,470 in the coming academic year. This means that an in-state student's contribution towards the cost of his or her education is larger than the state's contribution. Enough bad news. Here's some good news. The university's graduation rate of 93% is the top-ranked public institution in this category. and we tied for 12th among all of our peers, both public and private. UVA's retention rate for first-year students was 97%, among the very best in the nation.